And good day. Welcome to another edition of The Front Page on Morehead State Public Radio. Today, we're joined by Detective Toby Gardner from the State Police Post here in Morehead. Toby, thanks for coming over and spending some time with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Chuck.
I want to talk about one of your cold cases that you've been working on, and this happened, I think, a couple of years ago now. And if you would maybe tell the folks out there listening about the incident that you're investigating still.
Okay, the victim is Lloyd Souders. Mr. Souders was a elderly gentleman. He was 82 years old, and he lived on Lafayette Drive near the Hayes Crossing community here in Round County. We responded with the coroner to his residence on Thursday, October the 9th of 2014, so almost 2 years ago. A friend of Mr. Souders went up to check on him and located him deceased. He was lying outside of his residence, partially underneath of a vehicle that I determined to be inoperable. And he had numerous injuries. The type of person who'd done this was up front and close and personal with Mr. Souders in the way that they killed him.
It sounds like it would be somebody that he probably knew.
Well, I've bounced that back and forth several times. Actually, a lot of times over my mind throughout the course of this investigation, because any time you investigate someone's death, especially like this, you've got to look at how they lived to kind of find out how they died or who might have done this to them. And that's what's puzzling to us, is because everybody that we've talked to has indicated that Mr. Souders did not carry large amounts of cash. He lived by himself. And I'm not being disrespectful, but by looking at his residence, it would not be one that you would pick out to rob for valuables. He was good to everyone who knew him, according to the folks that we talked to. As a matter of fact, I was looking over my notes before I come up here, and there was a lady that I talked with who told me that she was involved in a wreck probably 6 or 8 months before Mr. Souders was killed. He was just a family friend, and her husband, the lady who wrecked her husband, was a veteran and needed to get back and forth to the hospital. He was in a wheelchair, so Mr. Souders bought them a van and installed a wheelchair lift on it and gave it to him out of his own pocket. So it goes to show the kind of person he is, which makes it a little more hard to wrap your head around why someone would do this to him.
You mentioned to me, and we've been talking about this case from time to time, I'll call you and ask you about how things are going, and that the way Mr. Souders died, I mean, someone really, really did a number on this guy.
Yeah, they did. He had numerous defense wounds. He was not shot. I mean, he was killed with a cutting instrument, I guess is the best way to say it. And also, it appears from speaking with the medical examiner, and I did attend the autopsy, that he had some blunt force trauma, which is not uncommon in any kind of murder. You know, I mean, if you're especially a hand to hand fight, if you will, and as I mentioned earlier, these folks or whoever done this, folks got up close to Mr. Souders and caused these injuries. So, yeah, it was pretty brutal.
It sounds like whoever did this was pretty angry.
Yeah, and once again, it's really puzzling to us because we can't find anyone that says that Mr. Souders was mad at them or they were mad at Mr. Souders. I know what his actions were. I've got him on video surveillance for probably a week in advance. He had his own routine like a lot of folks do. You know, you've got the group that hang out at McDonald's or the BPs or whatever, and Mr. Souders was one of those gentlemen. He liked to play the lottery a lot, and I've checked down every lead that I can. I mean, I've contacted the lottery corporation thinking, well, maybe he's won the lottery. A lot of folks know he plays the lottery. They see him at the gas stations. He hadn't won any large amounts of money. I checked his bank accounts. He did not have a large amount of money in his bank account. You know, so it kind of makes me wonder, did someone have the wrong person, or is there something there about Mr. Souders that we don't know?
Mm-hmm. I think initially when I talked to you about this, you were pretty surprised about what had happened to this guy because, as you said, everybody liked him. But at the same time, I mean, it's got to be frustrating for you. Here we are, you know, almost 2 years later, about a year and a half or so later on, and it's been difficult to find leads.
Yeah, it's been very, very difficult to find leads, and I remember talking to John Northcutt that day, the Round County Coroner, and John and I have worked a lot of scenes together over the years, and we told each other that our backs were up against the wall that day. And normally, once you've done a few of these cases, you kind of get a feeling of, okay, this is workable, or this is going to be a tough one. And we knew that day that it was going to be a tough one. I ain't going to say that I get a lot of information on this case, but it's still a topic in the community. And there's I wouldn't say quite a few, but there are several folks out there, 5 to 10 folks throughout the community, who keep it on the stove. They keep it hot. And which that's good for me, and I talk to those folks quite a bit. Matter of fact, I had someone call me as recent as a couple weeks ago talking about the case, give me their opinion on it. So I'll always entertain someone's opinion. You know, I mean, we've got to be able to prove beyond a reasonable doubt if we take it to a court and charge someone, which we're not there yet, but I'll always entertain someone's opinion.
People will always ask you this question when you discuss a murder case or a robbery or whatever. You're always looking for quote unquote persons of interest, and you mm-hmm. may have some that you think could have been involved. Have you gotten to that point?
Oh, yeah. I've had some persons of interest that I've talked with and investigated, but it just hasn't panned out for one reason or another. You know, I mean, I wouldn't go into the specifics of it, but I don't think that those persons of interest would pan out.
Well, describe the scene where Mr. Saunders was killed. Rather, it was the driveway of his home, as you mentioned. He was found partially under a vehicle. Is this a remote place where not a lot of people could have seen what would have happened?
Yes, yes, and no. It was fairly traveled. You could see it off of US 60. However, you had to be looking to see it off of US 60. Lafayette Drive runs parallel to US 60. Probably his residence was probably 150 yards, I'm just guessing, off of US 60. Off of Lafayette Drive, it was right off Lafayette Drive, but it was up on a hill. There was a outside light pole there. And for that community, I would say that there's quite a bit of traffic, but, you know, his movements, the best I can ascertain, he had last contact with someone around 7:30 on the night before he was killed. The weather played a horrible factor on us as well, especially with him being outside. I think, according to the investigation, it would show that he had been dead for some time. I would tend to say closer to 12 hours than 1 hour. So he had definitely been outside, and it had rained that night, so that hurt us as well. There were some homes in the area, and we talked to everyone up there. The two nearest homes were vacant, so once again, it's just our backs were up against the wall. You know, it seemed like every time we would think, okay, we maybe have something, and we would get a curveball again.
So again, when you talk about it raining, if there's some possible DNA evidence out there, it's gone.
DNA and fingerprints. There were some lottery tickets laying on the ground near Mr. Saunders, in which it was obvious that they had been soaked from the rain, which prevented us from getting any kind of fingerprints off of those. We towed his vehicle in, the vehicle that he was found underneath, and we secured it, and we had our crime lab come in and bring all their high-tech equipment for fingerprints and DNA, and there was just nothing there.
What time of day was he killed?
I believe he was killed probably on Wednesday, October the 8th. I would tend to believe after 10 o'clock at night. And I was looking at my timeline before I come up here. I know when someone last talked to him. I have his cell phone records when he last made calls and so forth. But I talked to a gentleman. There's a cemetery nearby. And a gentleman had a son who's buried in the cemetery, and he frequents that quite often. So he was familiar with Mr. Saunders and what he drove. And he was at the cemetery about 10 o'clock the night before, and Mr. Saunders' vehicle was not there, the vehicle that he drove every day. It was there when we found him, which tells me that he came back to the residence sometime after 10 o'clock that night.
So, again, it was dark at that time, so if somebody is going by, it may have been hard for them to see anything.
Yes, yes, it would have been.
So, I mean, that doesn't help a whole lot either. Does he have a lot of family? Or?
No, he doesn't. He has a couple children who live out of one lives out of state, and I believe one lives in Louisville, and I have talked with them on a routine basis. But he has a lot of friends, and I talk with them I would tend to say on a weekly basis. I mean, it's not like they pick up the phone and call me and say, what are your updates or what have you, but it's always a topic of conversation. He worked as a mechanic. There were a lot of folks in the sheriff's department and on the fire department that knew Mr. Souders. And once again, they all spoke very, very highly of him as well.
I just wonder if he'd worked on someone's vehicle, someone got upset maybe with the work or what he was asking for in return for the work, and maybe that had something to do with it.
Yeah, I wouldn't eliminate that as a possibility, but once again, it would be hard to wrap your head around, you know, to think that a kind of person that would buy a vehicle for someone and fix it up out of their own pocket, and, you know, it had to be a substantial cost, and then, so...
He was 82, is that right?
82, yes.
So, I mean, he's an older man, and for him to try to protect himself might have been difficult.
Well, he was in really, really good shape. I would have to agree with you just based on his age. But according to the medical examiner, Dr. Meredith Frame, he was in really, really good shape for his age of 82. By looking at him, you wouldn't think that he was 82 years of age. I mean, he was active. But I can tell you that I think he did put up a good fight.
Toby, where do you go from here with this? What types of things can you do?
Well, we're doing one of them today, and I will put this case on our cold case list on the Kentucky State Police webpage. I just added a case to that the other day, a hit-and-run accident that's still going. But talking to people and just never giving up and hope that you've done things correctly, you've preserved your evidence, and you've talked to everybody that you can talk to in hopes that maybe a fresh set of eyes one day will come in and look at it and say, hey, you've missed this, or here's where we need to go, or this adds up. And
so if someone has some information, how can they get a hold of you?
Yes, they can call me at the post, the State Police Post in Moorhead. That number is 606-784-4127. That's the best way to get a hold of me. Or they can go to the Kentucky State Police website. That's kentuckystatepolice.org. And they can go to Post 8, and there's a place to leave information or tips that are confidential.
Well, Toby, thanks so much for being with us. Good luck with the case.
Thank you so much.
Again, that's Detective Toby Gardner from the Moorhead Post of the KSP. I'm Chuck Meraz on Front Page. More in a moment.
There are many ways to connect with Moorhead State Public Radio. Log on to WMKY.org for enhanced regional news, on-demand audio and video, breaking news from NPR, and information on your favorite programs. Get links to Facebook and Twitter while you listen to our live broadcast online, or download mobile apps from NPR and take 90.3 FM with you everywhere. Connect with your community and Moorhead State Public Radio. Visit WMKY.org.
Welcome back to Front Page. I'm Chuck Meraz. We're joined now by Dr. Michael Henson and Dr. Susan Maxey. Dr. Henson is the Associate Vice President at Moorhead State, along with Dean of MSU's Graduate School, and Dr. Maxey is Director of Graduate Programs here at the university. And welcome to both of you, and thanks for joining us on Front Page.
Thank you, Chuck. We appreciate you having us.
Well, let's talk about graduate school. I mean, a lot of people go through and they complete their four-year degrees and they go on to careers, but for others, I guess they're looking to add to their skill set before they go out in the working world. And if you would talk about why graduate school, in your opinion, is important.
Well, certainly, Chuck, what you say is absolutely true. Here in the 21st century, we've found that, indeed, people entering the workforce need an even greater preparation. And many of our students actually have been successful in the workforce. Now they've decided to come back and hone their skills in certain ways to make them even more productive and to give them an even greater chance for success later in their careers.
Are you finding more people have decided on graduate school here in recent years?
Well, you know, graduate school, as Dr. Henson stated, gives you that special, that leg up in the workforce. And actually, the trends have been flat nationally for graduate enrollment. And we are seeing a slight increase now that the economy has improved. And so more students are seeking employers who offer tuition discounts or tuition remission for their graduate studies. And so we're finding more are turning that direction.
I guess we've all talked about the fact that you're trying to let people know a little bit more about what Moorhead State has to offer from a graduate program standpoint, because they may not be very aware of what the opportunities are. And maybe we could talk about that.
Well, certainly, Chuck. In Eastern Kentucky, everyone knows the story of Morehead State University being the great light unto the mountains with respect to undergraduate education, certainly. But I think with respect to graduate education, we've sort of kept our light under a bushel for a long time, and people don't really understand or know that Morehead State University is also a great place to continue their education with respect to graduate education and honing those skills that we talked about. So hopefully going forward, with respect to some of the great programs that we have, the great diversity of programs we have in graduate education, we'll be able to get that word out going forward.
Dr. Maxey, if you would, I know you've got kind of the list of what the programs are like. Maybe you could run down some and give people an idea of what their opportunities might be.
Well, for online, we offer 26 different totally online programs. Our most popular program is the Master of Arts in English, followed by the Master of Business Administration, and then we go into, our history is in education, so the Master's in Counseling is very popular as well. These programs can be completed in as little as 1 year. If they start in the fall semester, they would end in the summer too, and so we also have the benefit of flat rate tuition. So we don't charge a differential pricing for out-of-state. We offer one price for an in-state versus an out-of-state. We don't charge an online fee. So we feel like our pricing makes us very, very compatible to other institutions, and so we really cater to those.
What's interesting is you talk to some people, they've gone to school, they've gotten their degree, they go out in the working world, they work for a while, and perhaps they'd like to come back to graduate school, but at the same time, now they have a family, they've got some other responsibilities, and they say, you know what, I'd like to do this, but I don't have time. What would your answer be?
My answer would be you don't think you have the time, but you really do. Online courses are very convenient in that you don't meet at a set time. So, for instance, you would go into your course on our Blackboard, as the modem that we use, on a Sunday afternoon, and you have a full 7 days to complete your homework. So a lot of students, what they do is they just set aside, every Saturday I'll do my homework, every Sunday I'll do my homework. The modality is there for convenience. So I really encourage them to try it because it's not as hard as you think. We have many students who have, you know, as you said, families and jobs, and they're able to complete the program in a year's time.
I think you bring up a really good point, and I was going to ask you about the online availabilities of coursework. I guess it's important to have that kind of flexibility moving forward because, as we all know, all classes used to be in a classroom, but not everybody could be in the classroom.
Well, that's true, and we certainly find that with respect to the actual audience that needs graduate education so much nowadays, increasingly it's more and more the non-traditional student who works around their schedule, their career schedule, their schedule with their children's and so forth. So it makes it very appealing to that particular audience to have that type of flexibility. Of course, with that, I can say that with regard to traditional programs, we're very strong at Morehead State University with traditional programs, and we have traditional master's programs, for example, that are offered in traditional formats. We have a great new master's program, the Master of Science in Space Sciences Engineering, for example, one
That's
of the only
cool
in
program,
the country, which is extremely cool, and it's offered in a traditional format and is made possible by a great deal of grant funding with respect to research, and those students not only learn in the classroom, but they're also building satellites for actual use in space. And we have several large grants, some of them from NASA, that provide for that sort of thing. So a wide range of opportunities in both traditional formats and in non-traditional formats available for a variety of audiences for graduate education at Morehead State.
Do you run across a concern where you have someone who's been out of school, let's say, 6, 7, 8 years, and they say, you know, I don't know if I can go back in the classroom or go online and I can handle this kind of stuff because I don't know if I can compete in this situation because it's been so long since I've been in school.
We do get that a lot. The advice that I give them is to try it, and I've never had one to come back to me and say, I can't do this. So our Blackboard is very hands-on and with a tutorial for a brand-new student, and so when they register for that class, It walks them through every single process to that. But, yes, that is a common concern that students let me know, but I have never had one to come back and say, I can't do this. We have it all set up for them.
And I'd like to add to that, we have a number of mechanisms that address student success within the graduate school. We have a wonderful program called the Graduate Student Advising Center within the graduate school, and that pretty much makes the information available to graduate students, non-traditional students, and traditional students alike that need to understand the nuts and bolts of what it takes to get through with their education. And they have an opportunity to correspond directly and to speak directly with representatives within the graduate school that will give them the information they need to be successful.
So if they feel like they might need some tutoring, they can get some help?
Yes, we offer that. We offer registration assistance with those students. We offer them career counseling. We go over their plans for what they want to do with this degree, and we give them step by step. We hold their hand through every process, and so that's why we created the center for those people who are a little bit, you know, concerned that they've been out of school and won't be able to handle it. But we've not had any problems.
I'm just wondering, and I'm hoping you can answer this question. I know that a lot of things are a lot more high tech than what they used to be. So when you talk about a chance to hone your skills, add to your skill set, graduate school could be the answer to help you maybe take that next step from an employment standpoint.
That's very true. And as I said before, more and more of our graduates are finding that out. And it's not because that the education that they've received at the undergraduate level is in any way deficient. It's just in this highly technological society that we now have, it has become apparent that more information is needed to be at the disposal of those students to be successful. And I think that's what more than any other reason, I think that's why the graduate school at Morehead State University exists.
Let's talk about the cost. I know that's always the bottom line for a lot of people. I'd like to do it. I'm not sure I can afford it.
Well, right now our courses are $579 an hour. We do offer graduate assistantships to help offset the cost. That's for a full-time student. It's also an opportunity for them to gain experience. So they do research in the department of their choice, and it provides them with 20 hours a week working side-by-side with that researcher. And like as I said, it's $10,000 per year is what the graduate assistantship pays. We also offer for Round County or contiguous county students, it's the Major James Scott DeHart Fellowship. And so that helps offset the cost. And graduate students are eligible for loans, Stafford loans and different a numerous number of loans. And so there are ways to offset that cost. But, you know, the most common that students use is the tuition remission from their employer. There are a number.
I didn't know about that.
Yes,
there
are a number of employers in the region who will pay for their tuition, and so they take advantage of that. For teachers, teachers in our service region, if they take on student teachers or PPN students, they receive waivers for their classes as well. So there are a number of ways that they can offset that cost.
How many students do you have currently here in graduate school at Morehead State?
We average around 1,300.
All right, and obviously mm-hmm. you'd like that number to grow a little bit, and that's why we're here talking about it.
Yes.
And at the same time, I mean, I think you brought up a really good point when you talked about graduate assistantships. A lot of people don't know that they can actually have maybe some employment. They can actually add to their skill set and learn some things, but they can also offset a great deal of the cost of their tuition.
With respect to those graduate assistantships, certainly I would say that those are highly competitive mechanisms, and they have to be applied for. But what they do is they make it possible for a student to not only learn but also to practice the skills that they learn in a professional setting. And we find that with respect to future employers, that's very important, and it is often as important that they receive that hands-on experience as to what they actually did in the classroom. So we think that's another mechanism for student success with respect to graduate education.
All right. Now, if someone is interested in getting involved in graduate school here, rather, at Morehead State, how could they do so?
Well, we have many mechanisms coming up. We have a virtual open house that we'll be offering on August the 4th. And so we will have information on our website for that. We will be waiving the application fee, which is normally $30, so they can come in through this open house and receive more information. Or any day from 8 to 4:30, our office hours, they can call the graduate school. The phone number is 606-783-2039. We also we have many ways that they can pursue our website, which is www.moreheadstate.edu/graduate-school. And so we have all this information on there as well.
Again, that phone number is?
606-783-2039.
All right. Dr. Henson, Dr. Maxey, thanks so much for being with me on Front Page today. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Chuck.
I'm Chuck Mraz on Front Page. We'll see you next time.